있죠.
노이어가 나왔어요.
골 뺏었어요.
최세종 공을 가르칩니다.
반대
Hi, welcome to the Tavern of the Take It Warriors podcast. I'm the old tavern owner, Roy Gim, from Tavern Studio Quebec. We've got Tim Lee, and we're going to check in with him real quick. You were saying that the weather is like fucking hot out there, right?
It's ridiculous. Apparently, right now, it's hotter in Quebec than it is in Cairo, in Egypt. So there you go.
In one of my favorite parts of the world, Los Angeles, which I call the land of milk and honey, maybe partially because Roy Choi and his Korean taco trucks are out there. We have Korean-American journalist Steve Han. Welcome to the Tavern of the Tegak Warriors.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Excellent. Copacetic, well, especially after this miraculous win.
And, sure.
Over Germany. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. Steve Han, you may know him from a lot of different media outlets, but Goal.com is one of his main media outlets, and we're honored to have your presence. And I just want to...
Oh, no, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for having me. That's a stretch, but thanks for having me.
No. It's the truth, man. Well, listen, Tim and Steve, let's set aside a moment all that went wrong in this World Cup, like Shin Tae-young, cough, Jang Hyun-soo, and revisit just how shocked we are. I mean, we continue to be, you know, looking at Korea knocking out Germany from the World Cup, besting them by a score of 2-0. A result that will now be part of World Cup lore forever. But maybe this is hyperbole. I just want to get everybody's hot take on it. And I'll start with you, Steve. You know, sure. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being, you know, ho-hum, we're so bored, let's even bring up the topic about the MLS. We're open to that. To 10 being the football world has been shaken to its core. Or, you know, dare we say, this is almost on par of a miracle-like Kim Jong-un giving up power to and surrendering to the South, and the Korean Peninsula being reunited on that level of miraculousness. Where does this result, the 2-0 victory over Germany, knocking them out of the group stage, stand?
You're asking this game alone, right? This game,
yes,
in particular?
Just this game. Not talking about Sweden, not talking about the game with Mexico, just this game in isolation.
Sure. I'd say 9.5.
Yeah.
9.5, really. If not 10, I mean, this result, nobody saw this coming, especially with all the injuries. I mean, it was a miraculous game, just like you said. And I mean, obviously, if we were to talk about the World Cup campaign as a whole for Korea, I don't think you can say that it was a success, to be completely honest. But this is how you end it. If it's going to end in the group stage, this is how you go out. I mean, you're beating the world champions, you know, the FIFA rankings say they're the number one team in the world. Yeah. And to beat them, and remember, like, Korea put themselves in a situation where they can still advance by winning this game 2-0. So give them a lot of credit for that. But, you know, grand scheme of things, I wouldn't call this campaign a success. But that game in particular alone, I'd give it, you know, 9.5 out of 10 for sure.
Yeah, right on. Tim, hot take. What 1 to 10? What do you think?
I'm with Steve on this one. A 9.5 is right about there. Like, the performance wasn't perfect, obviously, but you're playing the world champions. We're desperate for a goal, and we're very, very well versed about Korea's limitations. And, you know, playing super defensive, bunkering down isn't their usual style of play in Asia, anyways. So to see them actually put up a decent defensive effort and get a few good cracks on the counterattack, press a little bit in the beginning of the match. Give credit where credit's due. The players were excellent and whisper quietly, but Shin Tae-young did do things right in this game too. There was a lot of luck, but all in all, it's a miraculous victory and maybe a little bit of revenge for 2002.
That's right. The 1-0 Germany win where they knocked us out of the semifinal on that Cinderella run. But let me stay on this game for a moment, because the other, I think, spectacular thing is how the World Cup in very strange ways unites different parts of the world. You saw the South Korean ambassador to Mexico There were, I think, hundreds, maybe thousands. I don't exactly know how many, but you saw the ESPN reports where they showed the South Korean ambassador being, people had him on their shoulders. He was given shots of tequila. It was really quite remarkable scenes all over Mexico as they, you know, we really bailed out their asses this one. But, you know, so everybody have seen those things. I want to, you know, obviously we're wrapping up Korea's time in this World Cup. And as you both mentioned, I think there's a lot of constructive criticism to go Team Korea's way. But also, you know, this game still, just nobody saw it coming. So it's such a cognitive dissonance. I want to first highlight a number of players. Kim Young-kwon is one player I wanted to highlight. I think he surprised me because this is a defender that, you know, had been roundly criticized for his 2014 World Cup performance, particularly against Algeria. And here, you know, I think a lot of us had low expectations about the defense, but he came up fairly solid in all the games, all the other group games against Sweden and against Mexico, and finally, definitely against Germany. I mean, and for him to then get that goal to start the ball, you know, in stoppage time, 91st minute, I think, you know, it was almost like, I don't know, the cosmic forces were aligned correctly to allow Kim Young-kwon to score for Korea. I don't know if you guys had any sentimental look at Kim Young-kwon scoring, but I know, am I wrong? Did he deserve that or not?
Well, I mean, no, you're not wrong. I mean, his ability is not to be questioned. He's always been a highly rated player among you know, people involved in Korean football. But it's just that his slump, which I think started around 2013, mm-hmm. because if you go back and look at the games that Korea played in 2012 Olympics in London, he was probably the best defender on the team then as well. And I think in 2014, I think injuries got to him a little bit. And obviously, you know, he's had some problems, you know, just not being able to say the right things in interviews. And he's got a lot of backlash from that.
That's right.
And I think that really affected him over the last year or so in terms of, you know, performing on the pitch too. But I mean, the way he played in this World Cup, you know, knowing what kind of player that he is, I'm not hugely surprised. But I am slightly surprised that, you know, he was able to turn things around so quickly because, mm-hmm. you know, even before the World Cup, his performances have been shaky. But, you know, to see him, he was pretty much flawless in my mind, especially against Mexico and Germany. And to see him perform this way at the highest level, it was really nice to see, honestly.
Yeah. Tim, I'm going to take a little different tack on this. It would be it's hard to play, you know, that's hindsight game, but had there been a different center back pairing, would it be wrong to say that things could have turned out a lot differently in this campaign?
Well, obviously hindsight is 2020. And obviously Kim Min-jae's absence didn't help the team either. I mean, he wasn't super tested on the international level, but it's hard to see him unfortunately do any worse than Chang Yun-soo unfortunately did. I guess my qualm was just that we've been very well aware as well as supporters and the coaching staff as well of Chang Yun-soo's limitations and his tendency to be over-aggressive. And we saw that penalty he conceded as recently as the East Asian Cup in the Japan match, which ultimately was overshadowed by the team's 4-1 win. But he gave up a really poor penalty early in that game. And what frustrates me is that it didn't ever seem to appear to crush into Young's mind to consider playing a different centre-back pairing or to drop Chang Yun-soo. Because he came in, he missed the Korea-based friendlies and came into the Europe friendlies and was brought in right away. No doubts about it. Obviously, we can't see what's happening in training camp, his fitness levels or whatever. But it's frustrating to see Chang Yun-soo playing in central defense for the national team at a key moment like that. Then again, you know, it's hindsight is 2020. The other defensive options could have been equally as poor, you don't know. But I can say that Yoo Young-sun had a great game against Germany, and no one saw that coming from the second division player.
Surprises upon surprises in mm-hmm. the Germany match, and that's another one of them.
A few key blocks as well from Yoo Young-sun.
Let me move to another player that I think everybody has lionized, and for good reason, Cho Hyun-woo. He's not on the radar of a lot of people coming into this World Cup, but suddenly, you know, his name was on everybody's lips after seeing this match. I mean, just, oh, what is it, 6-7 saves were just amazing. I speak for a lot of people that you know, this guy looks like he could be, is definitely the future goalkeeper for, and the present goalkeeper for the Korean national team. But I did want to thank Steve for putting out this one tweet. I had observed if there was any little bit of a kryptonite in Cho Hyun-woo's game was that his distribution was a little bit off. I made those notations, you know, during watching the game that, there was a couple of different unforced errors that he made. Can you elaborate more on what you were able to observe in his game that may have led to Korea's losing more of the possession than they should have?
Right, I mean, but, you know, take nothing away from the great performance that he put up in the World Cup. There's no question that he had a fantastic World Cup, like no question about that. But, I mean, his distribution was off. And I'm going to go back. Actually, I don't have this information on me right now, but I'm going to go back and check some of his passing statistics in the K-League, and I'll get back to you guys on that later on. But,
sure.
The World Cup, I mean, there were some errant passes, obviously. I don't imagine his passing to be that bad at the K-League level because, you know, obviously the nerves have got to him probably.
Yeah.
That's my thinking. But, I mean, it was a bit of a concern. I mean, I'm not going to take anything away from the fact that he's saved Korea on so many occasions by making those, you know, great, great saves. But Korea, they bunkered down a lot in this World Cup, as you guys saw. And a lot of their attacks, it came from counterattacking. And to have your goalie turn the ball over so frequently, obviously, that was slightly frustrating. But, you know, if he can make saves like that, like then you really can't complain. It's like, you know, you have to find that balance. And overall, I think he's had a fantastic tournament. But if there's one area that he can improve, it's definitely distribution.
Sure, sure, absolutely. And it, I may be jumping the gun because you know, there was a lot of people that were talking about that didn't know his situation exactly in the K-League, that were you know, was speculating that, oh, here comes another Korean that may be able to move to Europe. Except yeah. that my understanding is he's set to move. His time is up. In other words, he's got to serve his roughly two-year mm-hmm. mandatory military conscription service.
Right.
And, you know, in this situation, since he's already played a number of years for Daegu FC, that mm-hmm. means he's going to transfer to the army team, Sangju Sang.
Right.
Barring mm-hmm. possibly, you know, getting being added onto as an overage player in the Asian Games.
Yeah, that's a tough one because my understanding is Hanbamgun and Kang Hyun-woo are like the least of Kim Ek-bum's problems in yeah. terms of being two really good goalkeepers who themselves deserve, you know, exemption. I've heard that Hanbamgun could, you know, if he continues to perform at the level he is, starting for Chunbuk at his young age, could easily move on to greener pastures as well. So
what a dilemma. What a job. Because you've got good young goalkeepers who could be the future. They could really use military exemption, but so could everybody else. But
I guess it comes down to what Kim Ak-bum wants to do with his team. Does he want the players he selects to be the best players available for exemption? Or does he want to use overage players to fix the weaknesses in the squad? And obviously, Song Heung-min is the exception to the rule. He was going to be called up regardless of whether or not they're good attackers or not. But, you know, the two overage spots, do you want to use on a goalkeeper in the Asian Games when you have two already decent goalkeepers, or use it on other positions where the team may need some reinforcement? So, yeah.
That is, it is the three overage players that is going to be chosen for the Asian Games is going to be a really, really tough subject. But we're gonna get to that a little bit later. I'm jumping the gun. One more thing about Cho Hyun-woo. I think... one of the unexpected things that Shin Tae-yong did during this World Cup campaign was to actually choose him as the number one goalkeeper. Because I believe it was Kim Jin-hyun who was, or am I wrong? Was he the number
Kim
one goalkeeper?
Kim Sung-gyu.
Okay. He was set to be the number one. And then suddenly, right during, you know, we saw it during Sweden. You know, there's Just Cho Hyun-woo up there. I mean, what is one of those things I want to say, of all the constructive, you know, outside of all the constructive criticism we're going to pile on Shin Tae-young, maybe I can start a little small 30-second segment. We can thank Shin Tae-young for not only, you know, Cho Hyun-woo, but what else? I mean, I'm going to put you, Steve, on the spot right now.
Yeah.
What can you thank Shin Tae-young for, despite all his faults in this campaign?
Well, I mean, a lot of things. I mean, obviously, he's made his mistakes as well, but fair share of mistakes. But a lot of things were outside of his control. I mean, I think you have to give him that, really, because he's been in charge of this team for, what, 10, 11 months?
That's right.
10 months? And I know some people are saying that, oh, he's been an assistant for about 2-3 years, so he must have known the players. But I actually disagree with that, because he had to leave the team during Uli Shilike's time, because he was in charge of – they put him in charge of the under-23 team and the under-20 team. So it's not like he had these 3 full years to be with the team and really just to really have that authority to make changes within this team. And from what I know, what I've heard during his time as an assistant with the Korean national team, he did not have that much say in the team. He didn't have a whole lot of influence when he was an assistant. So that's another thing that's worth thinking about. But I mean, in terms of the good things that he did, I think implementing the 4-4-2 formation, which Korea never played since the 2010 World Cup, I think that was really key, honestly. And
that was a formation they used in the November
right?
Really impressive win against Colombia.
Yeah, that was the first time in about 7 years Korea actually started a game with a 4-4-2 formation, and it was immensely impressive if you remember that game. Yeah. So I think that's one of the main contributions that he's made to this team. I mean, and bringing on Lee Seung-woo was obviously big, because I don't think anybody saw that coming when he was announcing this final squad for the World Cup. Those two, and you know, the fact that he had the nerve to start Cho Hyun-woo as the starting goalkeeper, because I think most people thought that he was going to be Kim Seung-kyu, but he made that change, and it worked. You can't deny that it worked.
Does anybody know why he made that gutsy decision? Because it really seemed like it was going to be Kim Seung-kyu, and then just out of the blue, it was Cho Hyun-woo.
He actually talked about it at the airport when he arrived in Korea. He said that he had his mind made up for a few days before the World Cup, but he just didn't let the players know. I think it's something that he saw in training. Because Cho Hyun-woo revealed that he only found out that he was starting the game like a couple hours before.
Good God, really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? But yeah, that's what happened. But Shin himself said that he made the decision to start Cho Hyun-woo over everybody else, every other goalkeeper. Like he said at least a few days before the start of the World Cup.
See, that's a trick. That's a trick that worked.
I guess. Yeah. But you know, he must have saw something in training, because the reaction time. The decision making, the instant decision making to be able to, be able to punch the ball out, to be able to come off his line. It was really refreshing to see that kind of incisiveness, you know?
Yeah, but honestly, if you've seen him at least a few times playing in the K-League, you can't be so surprised by the way he played, because he makes those saves a lot. Because he plays for Daegu, which is not, you know, one of the stronger teams in the league.
And so he has to work a lot more.
He's forced to make all these saves. And, you know, his skills, it's been on display for a couple of years now.
Well, if we're staying on the what we can thank Shin Tae-young about, I can say for not starting Kim Shin-wook, particularly last game against Germany. But, Tim, I'm going to pigeonhole you about Lee Seung-woo, something that Steve Han brought up. Would you agree that's something that you would thank Shin Tae-young for choosing him on this roster? It was definitely a surprise when he was chosen for the final 23-man squad.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, absolutely. It's, there are other teams at this World Cup who utilize players as young as Lee Seung-woo and as maybe inexperienced on an elite level as a single, even more than Shinturn preferred to use his singles. So even some people could argue that he should have been off the bench earlier in some of the games instead of bringing on, you know, Chung Woo-young and trying to change the formation and stuff like that. He should have just tried to bring on Isung right away and not give him just 15 minutes, but rather more like 30, 35 minutes to make an impact. So that's, you know, one of the arguments. But I think in terms of just calling him up, just that individually is great because it provides him the World Cup experience that he needed. And I think the team also did well, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, but they did well in kind of managing him. Because as soon as he was called up, he was like the poster boy of the team. There was Lee Seung-gu and Son Heung-min's face plastered all over Naver, as if Lee Seung-gu was suddenly going to rise to like be like a key starter in the squad, which he wasn't. And so the team kind of really lowered expectations, and Lee Seung-gu himself was much more humble, relaxed, and just kind of one of the other fun guys in training. He wasn't there to be the star. Mm-hmm. And his time will come, but for now they seem to want to give him that World Cup experience and help him learn from older players so that he can take on the attacking responsibilities or a much greater role in the squad when it comes to Qatar 2022 and moving on after that.
Sure. But I'll simply add, I do wish that Shin Tae-yong did start Lee Seung-woo over Moon Sung-min, but that might be another sort of side topic for another time.
It's tricky.
I guess so, yeah. But then again, as you say, I think I can thank Shin Tae-yong for bringing Lee Seung-woo in to this World Cup campaign. This is a nod to the future, and that's really where it's at. Especially for we're talking about attempting to move Korea forward. I'm gonna just get on one more like positive feel good topic. But Son Heung-min, unintentionally became a leader, particularly in the Germany match. He was given the armband after Ki Sung-young went down for an injury during the Mexico match. Did he rise to the occasion and become a de facto leader for Team Korea?
I think he did. I mean, you can't really ask for more. He scored a goal. He was dangerous on counterattacks. And it's not even about what he did on the pitch. Like, off the pitch, when you listen to his interviews, you can just tell that this is a player who's matured so much over the last couple of years.
Sure.
And I think it was the right decision to make. Well, the funny part about this is that the vice captain on this team is actually Chang Hyun-soo.
Really?
What? Yeah. Oh, you guys didn't know this.
It was like...
I'm speechless, actually.
You guys didn't know this.
I feel like not many people did because it's kind of kept under wraps a little bit.
I don't know.
People don't talk about vice.
Well, it doesn't surprise me vice that captains. Much, but, like, in hindsight, it's like, really?
He's been the vice captain of the team right behind Ki Sung-young, and Shin Tae-yong contemplated making him the captain for the Germany game. I think he even talked about this in one of the interviews before the game. But you know, with all the criticisms and him just debating whether or not to start him,
that's right.
They left the decision up to him, to Chang Hyun-soo. If he wanted to start, then we're gonna give you that opportunity. But if you don't want to start, if these criticisms are getting to you and you're affected psychologically, then we'll rest you for this game. But he made the decision to play.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't want to give him, but he didn't give him that armband because obviously that was just going to add extra pressure for him.
Oh my God.
And he made Son Heung-min the captain. Son Heung-min played captain against Honduras in one of the friendlies
prior to
the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that was actually because Chang Hyun-soo didn't play in that game. He was injured for that game. And he was sidelined.
Right.
Remember that?
Right.
So, it's so funny listening to you guys reacting that way though, because you guys are like screaming.
I guess so. Yeah.
He was the vice captain for this team, but it's just the situation just played out in a way that he just couldn't wear that armband that last game.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Jang Hyun-soo, I did read that he was given, you know, the choice. It was up to him whether he wanted to play against Germany or not. But what may have made that decision a little bit easier, I'm going to speculate, is that he wasn't the center back. Instead, he was the defensive midfielder.
Well, for the last 20 minutes or so, he was pretty much a central midfielder or even an attacking midfielder.
Yeah, he was far forward. Up.
Yeah.
That brings to mind another Son Heung-min positive contribution that people actually criticized Son Heung-min for was the corner kick that led to Kim Young-gwan's goal. People said that they thought it might have been a poorly hit corner kick where they got lucky.
Yeah.
But when I look at that in review, I almost think that he was trying to shoot to target Jang Hyun-soo. And then
Yeah, that's
he
what
was
I
sort
thought.
Of able to yeah. get. I mean, it, in there was a you know a scramble in the box. Obviously, we know from you know after the fact what happened. Tony Cruz, you know, tried to you know pass it to his teammate, went through the center back's legs and right to Kim Young-kwon. But
yeah,
you know, I think that that is interesting. Jang Hyun-soo, you know, played a part in that.
Yeah, it was actually a decent. It was actually a really decent movement. You know, he even backheeled it. It was like, but you know, analyzing that particular play is kind of weird, kind of strange to me because, yeah, I mean, yeah, you just talked about it. It may have been a missed hit corner kick, and it starts from that. And then after that, you have a defender doing a backheel to pass that ball, and then you have Tony Kroos just like, I don't know what he was thinking, but he just passed the ball to Kim Young-kwon, and then he scored the goal. So it's like it was one of those weird plays. It was like after fluke, and it just led to that goal. So it's like to analyze that play to me is just kind of strange. You know
it's
what I mean?
It's bonkers, really. And then not to mention another Sun Heung-min contribution, which is scoring two goals in this World Cup campaign. One beautiful one against Mexico, which may have been one of the World Cup best goals scored.
Yeah.
And who was it? Sejong.
Choo Sejong.
Yes.
Choo Sejong. Yeah.
Was able to get the ball from Manuel Neuer. And then boot it up to some...
Right.
Speaking of strange goals we're analyzing, this is up there. But like,
but that's what he does, though. Choo Sejong is a great long-range passer. And he hit that pass quite well. I mean, it was a strange goal, no question about that, but that was a good play.
And he knew Manuel Neuer is out of position because he's right in front of him.
yeah, and he hit that pass right on the money, right into the penalty box.
Yeah.
With Son like, doing really well, I think just staying behind his line at the halfway point line.
Right.
So it wouldn't be offsides.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was bonkers, but just unbelievable. And I don't know about you guys, I lost my shit after.
Of course.
We're gonna take a quick break. You're listening to the Tavern of the Taekwondo Warriors podcast, where we are doing a wrap-up on Korea's performance in the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Man, what a crazy World Cup it's been so far. There's so many things that we could talk about, you know, with Shin Tae-yong, all the things tactically that went wrong. That could be almost an entire podcast in of itself. So I just want to highlight one thing that I thought, you know, am I wrong to signal that this was like the height of like managerial mistakes to make is to bring on a substitute, Hwang Hee-chan, in the Germany match, and then 10 minutes later substitute him out.
See what happened.
I don't think any of us know really because they never really talked about it. I think win kind of, you know, the win just like overshadowed everything, and they never really mentioned it in the media either. But Hwang Hee-chan did an interview after the Germany game, and he said the coach told me to come out, and I came out. But I'm happy that we won. So
some people speculated that Hwang Hee-chan was injured, but that wasn't the case, right?
That wasn't the case at all. What I've heard, it's all speculation. I don't have a source for this or anything like that. But I've heard people say there was one particular play where a German defender had the ball. And Shin Tae-yong expected him to press high up the pitch, but he just stood in the midfield. And that's what really just convinced him to make that decision. I don't know if I agree with that, but some people mentioned that. And, you know, that could be it. Like, no one knows if it's true. But, yeah, it was strange for sure. It was a strange decision.
Is there anything for both of you gentlemen that highlights, I think the frustration? And, again, we're talking constructive criticism here. Not egg throwing. about Shin Tae-yong and sort of the way he conducted himself, that I think that's part of the frustration of the Germany game too, ironically. As happy as I was with the result and as surprised as I was, I think there was that, I think a lot of people could say, what could have been had we managed, like for example, the Sweden match a little better, differently.
Yeah, right. Oh my God. I mean, I still can't get over, like, the tactical idea makes sense. You could have either gone at Sweden or bunkered down defensively and try to make them come at you so they leave space behind, because they didn't want to be on their front foot and have to cross the ball to Kim Shunokog all day. But that's exactly what they ended up doing. And they played the same personnel as if they're going to play aggressively and allow Sweden to play the defensive shape. But then they themselves played defensively. It was really strange to me because Kim Strömmer had no business in a counter-attacking side. I'm still trying to rationalize it, but you know, why play a target man who can't run to save his life if you're going to spend 85 minutes defending in your own box? Not to mention that the players who could counterattack, like Son Heung-min, was playing way too deep. You can't sprint 80 yards up the pitch to score on a counterattack. It's just not going to happen. And Sweden, like, credit to them, but they had their weaknesses also, and their vulnerabilities also. This group was more open than we thought it was, for sure.
Well, let me, Steve, let me redirect this question to you in this light. With the Mexico match, not as much has been mentioned about this. Ki Sung-young, when you look at the replays, was fouled right before Mexico got their second goal. That quick counterattack where they got the 3-on-2 advantage. Is it fair to say that, you know, that should have been a completely different result? Or did we play that badly that, you know, we should have deserved the result that we got, regardless?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you brought that up, because that particular play where it led to Mexico's second goal, it was a foul. There's no question about that. And I think VAR should have been used for it. But before that, I think I tweeted about this too. 3 minutes before that goal, Korea made a substitution. They Shin Tae-yong took out Choo Se-jung, and he subbed in Lee Seung-woo, right?
Hmm.
And they were changing to a different formation. They were making positional changes. They were right in the process of making those changes. And Ki Sung-yong, I think it was a foolish decision on his part, because he went forward to the attacking half and he tried to dribble.
Yeah.
And he was dispossessed. I mean, granted, it was a foul, but, you know, I think he should have been smarter as the captain of the team, as one of the most experienced players on the team. I think he should have sat deeper until the rest of the team kind of settled in their new formation. But he tried to attack for some reason when all those changes were being made, and then he was dispossessed and it led to the goal. So it was really frustrating to watch that happen, honestly. Yes, but I just think that deserves to be mentioned, because I don't remember anybody talking about it. I think that was really huge. That was a game-changing play to me, honestly.
Ki Sung-young is talking about retiring from the national squad. I mean, in light of what you just mentioned, in this hyper moment where Ki Sung-young, with all the vast experience and all the good that he has done within the Korean national team, is it a spectacular loss that Ki Sung-young is moving on? Or do we have enough future players in his mold who could take up the mantle?
Well, if we're talking about potential replacement, there's a player who's training with the Asian Games squad right now named Kim Jung-min. He's rated immensely highly by all experts. I mean, he's one of the top prospects, and he's expected to be a replacement for Ki Sung-young, but he's only, what, 18 right now?
Oh, wow.
So,
really young.
Okay. Yeah, he plays for Salzburg in Austria.
Along with Hwang Yi-chan.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, there's no question that Korea doesn't have an immediate replacement for Ki Sung-young. There's no question about that. I mean, not many teams do. There aren't many teams that have players who can immediately replace a player who's had this kind of presence in the team for the last 10 years, really.
Yeah.
So if he retires now, immediately, which I don't think will happen, I think he'll play at least until the Asian Cup. But, that would be a huge void to fill. I mean, granted, they just beat Germany without him, which was really surprising. But
part of the miracle with the injuries, right, as you say. Right.
But to lose him long-term, that would be a devastating loss, the way I see it.
Mm. Speaking of futures of different personnel, Shin Tae-yong, I'm getting conflicting results, or rather conflicting news accounts of his status. Korea Football News tweeted out that his contract is not going to be renewed by the KFA. And then I'm getting other news sources that saying that Shin Tae-yong is considering what his future may be. And there's rumors about him going to Segun Tasu over in J-League 1. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where we are with Shin Tae-yong. Do you or Tim have any news on this?
Tim, you want to go first?
I'm obviously less in the news loop than you are, but you were saying before the podcast that it might come down to him, which is worrisome. Like, I mean, no offense, but like the guy was thrown into a really difficult situation. Like, he has his faults. He made his mistakes, but he had 10 months, and he's the domestic manager. I mean, domestic managers are fine, but he doesn't have this plethora of international. He's no Bert van Marwijk, right? He's not. Right. He has the only experience he has in putting out these fires is with the Olympic squad, the U20 squad. He hasn't been given the chance to build his own team really over an extended period of time at the international level. If he's thinking in that light and he wants to get to show what his identity and build his identity through the national team really is, and he might want to stay. But I feel like with Korean soccer right now, there are a lot of, you know, structural issues and things like this. And I don't know. It doesn't feel like you want to go into a cycle of Shin Tae-yong at the helm. And it almost baffles me that the KFA would, you know, allow Shin Tae-yong to make that decision himself, if indeed this is the case. When, honestly, I'm all for consistency and trying to build an identity and stuff like that. But, you know, Shin Tae-yong has also not shown. He's the kind of manager who really stick to one or two things. Like, he likes to change and mix all the time. Like,
yeah,
I don't really know what good that's gonna do the team right now in the short term. Like, if you're gonna extend him until the Asian Cup, maybe. But like, I don't know. Like, it feels like now is the time for the KFA to inject fresh ideas into their football and look internationally.
Well, let me redirect that then to you, Steve. If the KFA does go ahead and not renew Shin Tae-yong, we're not exactly sure what's going to happen, so it's difficult to speculate. Yeah. But should they pull that trigger? Mm-hmm. I think you were mentioning on Twitter that you have some possible candidates that you'd like to see considered.
Yeah, no, that was just from me. I don't have I didn't have sources or anything. Like, that was just out of my head.
If hypothetically the KFA, if you had a direct hypothetical line to the KFA and they really listen to you, what would you advise them?
No, but before we even get there, I think it's worth mentioning that I think it was in December. It was after Shin Tae-yong was appointed. The KFA, I don't think you can call it a reform, but they did make some internal changes within the KFA, where they have a new technical director now, Kim Pang-gun, who he's an ex Hong Kong national team manager, and he's the person now who's in charge of, you know, appointing national team managers at every level, starting from under 17, under 20, and under 23, and you know, who knows what he's thinking. But so like there was an article, actually, I don't know if you guys read it, there was an article out of Korea saying that he has actually been on the lookout for a foreign coach since December.
Oh, is that right?
So, yeah, that's a totally different, you know, really just contrasting report from what we've been hearing, right? So there's always a chance that there's going to be a coaching change. I think they're going to go through a reviewing process, because I think one of the things that Kim Pang-gun has mentioned repeatedly is that he wants to make it transparent, the process of this hiring process of national team coaches. He wants to make it as transparent as possible, because one of the things that he said was the really important thing for the KFA right now is to restore the faith of the fans, because the fans are really against the KFA. I'm sure you guys know this as well.
Yeah.
And he said that he's going to do whatever it takes to earn that trust again. I don't know. Who knows if that's going to happen, but... So I think it's really 50-50. I think they'll sit down with Shin Tae-yong and discuss some of the things that went on, just the preparation for the World Cup as well as, you know, what happened during the World Cup. And, you know, we really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, it's only been about 2 days, right?
Since their
campaign ended. So I think we'll find out soon, though. There's a FIFA match week, right, in September, beginning of September. Team's gonna get back together late August at the latest, right? So the coaching situation will have to be sorted out within the next month or two, well, probably within the next 3 to 4 weeks, and who knows what's gonna happen. But if I have to make a prediction, I think they're gonna end up making that change, honestly.
Okay.
And but honestly, personally, I don't think it would be the worst thing if Shin Tae-yong stayed, because look, I think there's a huge gap between top-level Korean coaches and the really quality managers that you see at the World Cup. But at the same time, I think Shin Tae-yong is one of the better Korean managers, honestly. That's really my opinion. And
yes, that's true.
If he stays, I don't think it will be the worst thing, but I just hope that they don't go into a situation where they hand him a 4-year deal. I think it's going to be that's going to have to be one of those situations where he'll have to prove himself, whether that's at the Asian Games or the first couple rounds of the World Cup qualifying. You know, but we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be interesting, you know, over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'm starting to have more of an open mind about it. Like, as long as he is showing that he's got a learning curve, then,
And I think this World Cup was a big learning opportunity for him, which, you know, by the way, like, personally, you don't want to waste a World Cup on a coach who's going to consider it a learning opportunity. But I think for him, from his standpoint, this World Cup was a huge learning opportunity for him.
Yeah. And he did say, I think, before the World Cup, and maybe this is just like Korean translation or whatever, but he often said, you know, in this my first World Cup, World Cup, as if he was insinuating there's going to be more. And so for those who really want him out, he's not gone yet, and he might be sticking around for longer than you'd like. But no, for sure, he's definitely one of the best Korean managers. He got a lot of slack at this World Cup. He said some stupid things, and he deservedly got that slack. But, you know, I mean,
but maybe he's learning the PR game, too, because like that he didn't manage that part well on some occasions, you know.
Yeah, and the KFA PR department can do a better job of training him, honestly. Because some of the things he said in the interview, why? You know, why would you come out and say those things? It doesn't do anything to help the team.
The jersey number situation,
Right.
Especially the jersey number thing. It shocked me he'd actually say it in the bluntly as he did. Because like Korean managers have been doing this for like a long time. Like
we all know
did this.
Yeah,
Heung-min-Bo did this, and I'm sure if they asked the question, they managed to answer it in a really non-committal way. Like you don't have to go, oh well, Westerners can't tell Asians apart. Like, that's not the way to answer that question.
Yeah, right.
Moving on. You were mentioning, so it's only been 2 days since the Korean national team returned to Incheon Airport. And you would have figured there was going to be a lot of people coming out to cheer this team on for, you know, doing what seemed like the impossible, beating Germany 2-0, exactly the scoreline they needed to have hypothetically advanced had Mexico did their part and beaten Sweden. But instead there was maybe one or two people throwing bizarrely, looked like cushions that had the British flag on it, and throwing one or two eggs. Obviously, it wasn't everybody, because most of the people there were there to cheer the team. But I have to, you know, I was actually shocked, because I thought the days of yut throwing are over. They're going to be coming back to a hero's response, 100%, not just 99.9%. Am I correct to say those one or two nut jobs were just an outlier? Or was there a bigger sentiment there that was negative?
I think it's like, I mean, those two guys, was it one or two? Like, I don't know how many of them were there, but nobody would take it to that extreme, honestly. You know, that's my feeling. But there are quite a few people who are still unhappy with Shin Tae-yong, and rightfully so, honestly.
Sure.
I mean, it's people are very critical of him still. I think the public consensus in Korea right now is that now is the perfect time to make that managerial change. And, you know, you can agree with that or disagree with that, but I think it's a valid point. I mean, you know, like I said again, I think rehiring Shin Tae-yong wouldn't be the worst thing that could happen to the Korean national team. But that would actually be a decision that would go against the public sentiment, though. I think that's for sure, because I think most fans want to see a change.
But specifically regarding the egg thing, like I do think it's important to put everything into perspective. And like if you told people back in December when the World Cup draw happened or whenever it was, that, you know, we drew Germany, Mexico, and Sweden, and that we were gonna exit out of the group stage but beat Germany, we would have taken it and no one would have thrown eggs. Like we were so clearly in perspective the worst team in that group. The simple fact that despite recording one of our most historic victories, that people would think about throwing objects at the squad, it when they were this close to actually achieving their goal of qualifying for the round of 16 in what was one of the most difficult groups in the World Cup is, like, it's astonishing to me.
Yeah, it's baffling. There's no question about that.
I'm pretty critical of netizens at times for a lot of clueless opinions that, you know, they project. But it seemed like the netizens were unified against this time, against the people, the egg throwers. That might not have been the case, you know, 4 years ago.
But, well, yeah, the snap reaction when I saw it, I went to Naver, as a good Korean football writer does. And and I just read the comments, and everyone was like, you know, who are these dumbasses that are throwing eggs at the team? And so that was good to hear. But I think even more broadly, the abuse of the players in the squad, I actually find quite repulsive. Like, Chang-yeon's having to close his social media accounts, and like Kim Young-won at some point had to do that. And he said, you know, it doesn't bother me when people come after me, but when they come after my wife and my kids. And I was like, what? Like, we can be critical of them as players, and as players, as professionals, yep. they will take that criticism. Absolutely. That's their job, as, you know, as in any other job. They're not performing well, you're going to be criticized, and they're going to try to do better. But abuse of these players, and the notion that somehow they owe something to us, and when they fail, then they are putting shame upon us. And, you know, like, it's absolutely baffling. And it's a very vocal minority, but it is a minority. And there are ways to call for reform and call for change and criticize without going to that extent. And I think international, like, when we put out the tweet, one last thing, when I put out the tweet, got a lot of attention on our social media page, which is fine. But people need to know this was not indicative of how everyone felt. In fact, it was a very small minority who felt that way. We shouldn't be focusing on this particular event as much so as the broader problems we have to address.
I mean, I have to believe, in some large extent, as you say, the people who are heaping this this kind of abuse on Jang Hyun-soo, as much as we can constructively criticize him, I mean, you know, threatening online is something that goes above and beyond. And I have to believe they're more like maybe nationalist nut jobs that don't really understand or know football, you know? I mean, that's my take on it. But moving on, because as you say, you know, shouldn't be the focus on egg throwing, but on, you know, again, the miracle that happened. Where does Korea, and this is, again, this question could be a whole nother podcast for a whole nother time. Where do we go from here to improve Korean football in general? Is there? I know there's a lot of moving parts to this. What comes at the top of your mind when it comes to the whole laundry list of what Korea football has to do to move forward?
Well, I mean, it has to start from the top. And I'm not just talking about the national team manager. I'm talking about the KFA. It has to start from the top in terms of the president.
Yes.
Here's another thing. He doesn't come to work.
Yeah.
It's that simple, because he is actually that's not his real job.
No,
it really starts there. Yeah, his real job is he's in charge of a corporation, and he does not show up to work, and this is not his workplace, and it really starts there, because there's this sense of just like there's a lazy atmosphere when you deal with people within the KFA that it's just everything is just sort of like lax.
It sounds like they were just, what you just said, it just sounds like they're just phoning it in.
Yeah, and like, I hate to criticize Park Ji-sung, right? Because he's obviously a legend. He's done a lot for Korean football.
Sure.
But he has this title within KFA as the youth strategy director or whatever it is.
Okay.
He's not really doing anything. But that's another thing. Like, he has that role. But what does that job entail? Nobody knows, because he hasn't done anything since he was appointed. In fact, what he's doing right now has nothing to do with that job title. He's calling games for SBS.
Yes.
I mean, like, so it's all these things that they just do to show, you know, to I don't know. It's like it's a publicity stunt, really.
Okay.
And that kind of attitude will have to change for there to be any kind of, you know, positive change for Korean football as a whole. And if we're to zoom in just a little bit more, I think it really starts with hiring, or, you know, this process of, you know, just relaunching this national team, and, you know, who the next manager is going to be, what kind of style they're going to play with, how they're going to plan this next, you know, this 4-year cycle that they have to build.
Right.
Because AFC is just strange, meaning like it becomes a different ball game once you get past the first couple rounds of AFC qualifying, mm-hmm. because that final round is brutal. But before that, you're playing against Malaysia, Indonesia. Like, it's just a different type of ball game, really. And yeah. the KFA will have to sit down and strategize this. And they didn't do that last time around. They just thought that, you know, hiring a German manager and just letting him take care of business was gonna do it all. And obviously that didn't happen, because once the final round of qualifying started, we saw the deficiencies that this team was dealing with, right? So it has to come from the top, how they want to strategize this, how they want to plan for the next 4 years, 8 years, 12 years. And yeah, it really just has to start from there.
I mean, piggybacking what you just said. I think it was either you or another journalist that was highlighting Lee Young-pyo and Cha Byung-kyun saying some similar things about the overall structure, that what has changed in the last, you know, World Cup cycle. I mean, virtually nothing.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, whatever improvements that needed to have been made. And they wanted to go in and really go in depth to try to instigate some sort of, you know, reform, if you will.
Yeah.
What actually struck me, because Steve said this earlier, and reminded me of a tweet that he sent out back when we were in the end of the Sri Lanka era and we're looking for a new manager. I think we had to wait 2 weeks for Cha Byung-kyun to show up in Korea, because he's on some business tour internationally to, like, make the decision with regards to the manager. And, like, I'm not saying that this would have to be the next day, but generally, if you fire a manager, you can have some plan in place. And it didn't really seem... I mean, we didn't have a technical director to make that decision.
Right.
There have been occasions where the KFA has been woefully unprepared, and... you know, they have to start being humble enough to recognize that change begins with them, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether or not that actually happens remains to be seen.
I'm getting dirty looks from the tavern producer. He's pointing to his watch, saying we're over time. So we're going to wrap this up really quickly, but I don't want to forget something really coming very close on the horizon is the Asian Games. It's different from the Asian Cup, if you're not aware, but the Asian Games is sort of like, I don't know, a regional version, a small regionalized version of the Olympics. And I believe it's taking place in Indonesia in August. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the few small windows of opportunity for Korean footballers, especially, to get military exemption. And this is exactly what Sun Heung-min needs, an Asian gold medal, in order to stay in Europe and keep playing Champions League football. There is a report Tim, why don't you take this away? Because you saw this in Naver. The top trending report is...
The number one search right now, number one article right now in Korean sports Naver is regarding Lee Gang-in, the Valencia prospect. I think he's 17, 18?
Yes, and he's playing for Valencia B, I believe.
Valencia B, that's right. And obviously he has a great career ahead of him. Kim is reportedly considering to call him up for the Asian Games, which we've just mentioned, is a U23 tournament, and he just played at the Toulon tournament as a 17-year-old against, you know, players who are much older than him, and he was absolutely tearing it up. So basically, the Spanish FA and people in Spanish football are pushing very, very hard to naturalize Lee Gang-in to become a Spanish international. And reportedly, they're using military service, the fact that he has to face military service, that cloud looming over his career, if he chooses to play for Korea, as a reason to give up Korean national team, rather Korean citizenship, and become a Spanish citizen. Now, unsurprisingly, a lot of people freaked out, and this is all over Naver. I don't think it's going to happen.
But it does
for
raise
various reasons.
But it does raise that that idea that, you know, it's just fascinating to think that, you know, people like Sun Heung-min could hypothetically, if he doesn't get military exemption through tournament wins, could be coming back to Korea and play possibly in the K-League 2. So should Sang-joo Sang-woo get relegated? You know, that's exactly the reaction. It's ridiculous and preposterous and bonkers. People in Europe just can't wrap their heads around this.
You know? Apparently the Spanish FA has been trying for 3 years. So, like, this isn't, like, some sort of breaking news report. Like, it just happened yesterday. They've been trying for a consistent period of time, according to this report, to naturalize Yi Gang-eun. I mean, Lee Seung-woo didn't become a Spanish citizen. Like, I don't know much about Lee Gang-eun personally, but it would shock me, really, for a Korean out there to just switch allegiances to a different country. It just doesn't seem
like...
There'll
be a lot of backlash. There'll be a lot of backlash, for sure.
It isn't like one of those ambiguous situations where you're like a citizen of Kosovo and then Albania and then this and that, and oh, I'm playing for Switzerland. It's like he's a Korean in Spain. I don't think he's going to naturalize.
Well, I guess I'm going to leave on this note. Again, looking forward to the future because, you know, it should... There's a lot of work to do to improve the infrastructure for the development pipeline for Korean football to move forward. But it's possible. And that's, I think, the fascinating story about, I think, looking at the lens of Korean football. Like, can Korea move from point A to point B despite all the obstacles, despite all the geopolitical situation that has allowed, for example, people like Son Heung-min to have to worry about military conscription? But we have the Asian Games. At least there is this window of time. You can debate about whether this is a good thing or not, but who do you think, this is the last question I have, I guess. Who do you think could be the overage players and maybe some of the underage, I mean, the U23 players like Lee Kang-in, who is obviously under 20, he's 16, 17, so he could be not an overage player. Who are the overage players that could be invited to the squad and play? Because that's going to be a really tight list.
Yeah. I think realistically, the candidates right now are obviously Son Heung-min has already been confirmed as one of the three.
Okay.
I think the second one is likely to be Seok Hyun-jun, who's playing in France.
That's right. He doesn't have military exemption yet.
No.
Yeah, and he only has 1 year to do that. And I think the third one, this is just me, just personal, my opinion is that it's going to be one of the fullbacks because this is a team that's lacking a quality fullback.
That's right.
But who is it going to be? I'm not sure who they're thinking.
National team fullback?
Probably. Yeah, when you look at this squad for the Asian Games, they don't really have anybody who can play in that position. I mean, they do have players, but they don't have anyone of quality who can play in that position. You have Seungjae, who's playing for Hamburg second team, but that's about it. You don't really have a quality fullback on this team, and that's a major concern. And I don't know who the specific candidates are to fulfill that need, but positionally, I think it'll be that third spot will go to a fullback, but that's just my personal opinion.
What you say makes sense because obviously that is our one of our big kryptonite areas is in defense in the back line. What would you say about like someone like Kim Young-kyu? Q I think is a Spanish nickname, but I think he's playing I could be wrong somewhere in
he's
Spanish
playing, what, third fourth
yeah,
division
I think
in,
so
in Spain?
yeah but interesting prospect because at one time he did play against the likes of Bayern Munich. Lee Seung-woo, now he is not overage. He's age 20, so he can fit into the U23 squad without being an overage player. Is he likely to be called up?
I think so.
Verona being able to release him as well.
Yeah, I think he's in line to play in this tournament. He personally wants to play for this team. He's talked about that before. And I mean, he's just such a prospect that I don't think there's a way you can leave him out unless his club opposes it, which I don't see as a problem because it seems like Verona is really supportive of Lee Seung-woo playing for his country because they don't have a whole lot of international players on that team, and it's an asset to have a player like that who plays such a prominent role in the national team setup.
Yeah,
and now
World Cup veteran as well.
Right, and I think unless the club change, because I did hear that the new manager Fabio Grosso really likes Lee Seung-woo. And unless he opposes it, I think he'll be part of the team for the Asian Games.
Yeah, and he can always return to be a starter once he gets back.
If you remember the 2002 Asian Games, there are ways to sort of accommodate clubs with these Asian Games obligation because in 2002, when the Asian Games were in Busan, they called up Park Ji-sung when he was playing for PSV, and he only played starting from the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
He didn't take part in the group stage.
Those are some arrangements.
That's one of the options. Right, yeah. Right.
Going back to Steve's, going back to Steve's fullback thing, that's actually really interesting because, like, every single fullback on the national team, I just check either, like, is exempt, did their service, or isn't eligible for service. I believe that Koyohan isn't eligible for service because he's 30, he didn't serve, and apparently he dropped out of middle school. So I think back that's the weird, like, back route out of exemption to get military exemption. So
the loophole that doesn't exist now.
So it's going to be, like, a K-League player pretty much out of the blue, like it's a crapshoot. It's one of the yeah, but yeah, over 23, right? So anyway, it'll be interesting to see who that is. Kim Min-jae is under 23,
so he's gonna play
for sure. Question.
All right, yeah. All right. So because of that, a fullback, so a left back or a right back?
Yeah.
Huh. All right. So to be determined. Well, I think it's been a fantastic wrap-up of the Korea's, I don't know what you call this wild ride that they had. It was both disastrous and miraculous at the same time. I don't know how that's possible, but it happened. And this is going to be talked about and dissected for a long time coming, I think. And we have so much more to look forward to as we talked about the Asian Games and the Asian Cup in January. I hope everybody's able to stay tuned. But I just want to thank everybody, Steve Han and Tim Lee, for joining us. I had a very wonderful, spectacular time with you both.
Thank you, Roy.
Thank you.
So the Tavern of the Take It Warriors is sponsored by... Oh, wait. That's right. We are ad-free. And part of the reason we're ad-free is because we have a Patreon campaign. All you have to do is go to patreon.com to help support the goings on, to be able to help us keep the lights on at the Tavern. And we have some Patreon contributors that we want to thank personally from the bottom of our hearts. I'm gonna let Tim take it away from here.
Absolutely. So you might have gotten a shout out on the previous podcast, but we're doing it again because, of course, we really appreciate what you guys are doing for the site. So Lionel Lee, Joshua Lee, Bobby Kim, Glenn Jung, Namu Yoon, Joshua Kim, Andrew, Tamash Danicek, David Yoon, and an individual who does not want to be named but wants to say, I love Gunutnug, which is some big soccer Korea joke. All of you guys, regardless of how you chose to do your shout-outs, we really appreciate what you're doing. It really helps the site, keeps us going, keeps us motivated, and really opens up more opportunities for this website to grow and expand. So thank you so much for your incredibly generous support.
Yes, absolutely. And there's more awesomeness to come.
For those who do want to join, it's join our Patreon crowdfunding campaign. It's patreon.com/TakeUkWarriors. And, of course, all of our social media feeds. TakeUkWarriors.com is our website, @TakeUk_Warrior for our Twitter. And Instagram and Facebook, we are @TakeUkWarriors with the E before the U. So different ways of doing it, but we're on all the social medias and always willing to engage with our wonderful supporters. So thank you.
Word. So that's it for this podcast. Thank you very much for listening from all around the world, wherever you're at. And I leave you now with the sounds of Lee Young-pyo just going crazy about Kim Young-gwan's first goal for Korea, which initially was called back for offside. But as you undoubtedly know by now, VAR ruled in favor of Korea, goal for Kim Young-gwan. From all of us at the Tavern of the Take It Warriors, 자, 가요. 5분이 지났고 추가 시간 6분이 주어집니다. 자, 낮게 올렸습니다. 핸드립 맞춰서 슛! 들어갔어요! 들어갔어요!
김영광! 옥사이드가 들어왔어요. 옥사이드가 들어왔어요. 자, 갑니다. 골! 골! 그렇죠!